Welcome back, folks. We're joined by our friend Colonel Alex Gann, retired colonel and fighter pilot for the Israeli Air Force, now living in a small village in northern Israel. Colonel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good evening.
Colonel, give us a little bit of the state of what's happening in northern Israel here recently.
Well, it's a long... I'll try to put it in a nutshell. Well, basically, in the north of Israel, the fighting still goes on. What we see as civilians, as we get rockets coming over from Lebanon into northern Israel, we have, where I live, we run to the shelter maybe twice every 3 or 4 days, but the more north you go, it's more often. And actually today, my brother, who lives about 20 kilometers closer than me to the border, he sent me a picture of about 40 intercepts of the Iron Dome system at the same time over his house. So it's a whole plume. It looks like snow. And but what's going on is the Israeli Defense Forces are pushing north into southern Lebanon and actually clearing this unbelievable huge fortresses which were created by Hezbollah and were being made and prepared for the day that Hezbollah will attack northern Israel, the same as the Hamas did in Gaza. So what they find is tunnel systems with thousands of rockets, thousands of guns, thousands of helmets and military gear and anti-tank missiles, huge amounts of ammunition. And basically, they're starting to clear the area. So as they move more to the north, also the firing into the Israel is slowly moving to the north. On top of that, we have those drones coming in a few times a day. They are more difficult to intercept because they're more difficult to locate. But the Israeli Air Force manages to intercept most of them. But once in a while, one of them sneaks in and can cause severe damage. We had one about 10 days ago, which killed four soldiers and an army base in one hit the prime minister's house. So it's interesting. We don't, we're not resting here.
Colonel, there were a couple of votes that have been taken recently by the parliament in Israel. What's it called? Knesset? Is that correct?
Knesset.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Very interesting. It kind of, to me, forecasts that there's a changing attitude in Israel. I mean, I know that there were some deep divisions there for several months about the status of the war and where Israel would be. Do you find that people are more moving together on kind of the same plateau as to where they are on the issue with the war?
No, it's still very complicated because it's very, the main issue which people are divided upon now is the hostages. We still have 101 hostages in the hands of the Hamas. And the big debate and argument with the government is what will be the price that Israel will pay to release those people, because eventually we don't manage to find them and to release them by force. We did it only to a few, but we know it's complicated. And some of the parties, most of the parties agree that we'll have to pay a very big price for that, including a ceasefire in Gaza and retreating our forces out of Gaza. And some of the more extreme right-wing governments say, no, we shouldn't do that. And it's, it's very not popular, but we cannot retreat from their on account of 101 people. So this is a big debate. There are a lot of demonstrations in the streets by the people and the civilians in order to get them free. The second one is, you know, what's going on in the north. Basically, this government is really performing poorly. I think it's quite a consensus. About 70% of the people, no matter from what side of the political side, agreed that this government should go. But this government was elected, and they still have time, and it doesn't seem like they intend to go. So we don't see, the government didn't put up a vision of how this war would end. And it's a war and seven fronts, and eventually at some time it should end, and we have to have a vision. What will become of Gaza, what will become of South Lebanon, and what will become with Iran, the conflict in Iran. So,
but I have to ask this question. How does the population, I understand that is a threshold question and the defining moment question as to how this ends. But how does Israel define its future? Even before this, even before October 7th, how did the population define its future?
Well, it's a very good question. It's a very complex issue. But I'll try to summarize it. First of all, it's a big difference between October 7th and after October 7th. Mm-hmm. Because after October 7th, for the first time in 75 years of Israel being a state, or 78 actually, there was this, I would say, a sense of threat to the existence of Israel among the citizens for the first time. I think we're all over that. I personally, I don't think there's a threat, a military threat. But because there is such a divide and a dispute in ideas within Israel between the different sectors of the people, which means Israel was declared as a democratic, a liberal democratic Jewish state. That's the way it was put in the, and we don't have a constitution, but the Declaration of Independence in 1948. So that was our the torch we followed. Now there are some parties who say, first, it's a Jewish state, and whatever that means, and only after that, it's a democracy. And this is a huge dispute among the people. And we feel that if there's any danger to the existence of Israel, it's this issue, not the military issue. Because many people, most of the people who are holding this country on its shoulder, you know, every country is carried by, I would say, between 15-20% of its population. Those are the people who work, who create, who pay most of the taxes, et cetera, et cetera. And here it's the same. But the sector who carries this country on its shoulders is the liberal one. And if it will feel that the country is changing to become more religious, let's say, people will leave. Because these are the people who have no problem finding a job elsewhere, the people who are actually running our economy, the high-tech economy, is running by these people. So this is the main threat, which I feel today. We are waiting for the government to put a vision and look. Let's say what we want to be in the near future, how we end this war, and then what we want to do with ourselves. And it's not done because the Prime Minister, Netanyahu, for his own personal reasons, is running this whole show differently, I'm sure you know he's standing for trial, and his trial is running, and at the same time there's a war running, and it's very complex. So he's eventually running the show according to his personal preferences.
So, I guess no matter what his personal politics or his personal situation or anything else, it just, you know, as a U.S. citizen, we just have a difficult time understanding living in an atmosphere where there are these overt and covert threats looming at or inside your borders each and every day. The Iron Dome system that's activated almost daily, and certainly even before October 7th was activated weekly. It's just hard for us to contemplate living under those conditions. And that's why I asked the question about where does Israel see its future, even before October 7th. When you have the UN, you know, that UNRWA, which the Knesset parliament voted overwhelmingly 87-9 to forbid the state of Israel to have any contact with the agency. I applaud that. I mean, this is an agency that has helped Hamas in an attempt to destroy Israel. I mean, you know, the U.S. is funding it. All the Western countries are funding the United Nations. There's an organization within that is trying to help eliminate one of our greatest allies, you know. And
this whole thing with UNRWA, it's, you know, when the war broke out, and we found and we brought evidence that UNRWA was assisting the Hamas, so many countries stopped funding it. The U.S. stopped, and many other Western countries. But on the other hand, you know, it's politics. The Palestinians, they are masters of whining and crying and begging, and they always are suffering, and they're poor people, and they actually... It's unbelievable. It's a nation that lives on donations. They don't manufacture anything. They don't create anything. If they would have taken all the money they put into you know, they're never short of missiles, but they're always short of money. It's unbelievable.
Well, they're short of sustenance because their primary mission. Their primary mission in life, Colonel, is to kill you. And others like
that.
You.
We know that. So that's why we are, and actually the last few weeks we had, because when we go into Gaza and we go in the tunnels and we find a lot of intelligence material, and we find evidence that, for instance, one of the guys who led one of the big massacres of the Nova Party was a UNRWA member. And you find it in writing over there. And papers, you know, but the people in the politics and everybody is, you know, pitying the poor Palestinians. And I pity them too, but they brought it on themselves. So I think the way that the U.S. and the West are dealing, UNRWA should pass and go into history, because it's the Palestinians are the only people on earth who have their own help and organization. The rest of the world, they have another organization for the UN. But only the Palestinians have their own, and they should be the same as any other people dealt with. You know, Israel had the same amount of refugees as the Palestinians in 1948. We never got any help for anything. We just took ourselves and built a country. And they are still whining and crying. So this should that's why it was almost unanimous that UNRWA should cease to operate here in Israel. I'm sure it will have some political consequences. I don't know what the UN will do with this resolution, We may find ourselves out of the UN.
I hope that it temporarily disbands and reconstitutes itself and gains a better understanding of what their role should be. Because when you see Al Jazeera members and reporters facilitating Hamas in concert with UNRWA out of the UN, and you start seeing this big conspiracy, a lot of it being funded by your Western Europe and the United States, we need to cut them off. Because obviously they're not taking care of business within their own organization. And then all the while, they're entertaining them to eliminate Israel's participation in the UN. It's like, these people are crazy.
That's crazy. But also, when you look, you know, a lot of the terrible activities and attitude in the U.S. universities was funded by, over years, by Qatar.
Absolutely.
Organizations.
If nothing else, what y'all have done is shine. I said, if nothing else, what y'all have done is shining the light on all of these inconsistencies of what people say and what they're actually doing behind the scenes. The entire world has become uncomfortable because of this shining of the light. And I mean, when we just go back to Rafah, if you go to Rafah, that's the red line. The United States was saying, well, who did we find in Rafah? The moment in time that we articulated that position, where did anybody of any consequence in Hamas run to? They ran to Rafah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the most ignorant statement I ever heard of in my life. And where do we find, who do we find in Rafah? And what do we continue to find in Rafah? I mean, it just, you just got to shake your head. I got to get to a break. I apologize, Colonel Alex Gann. We'll check in with you in a couple of weeks again. Thank you so much for taking time. We really appreciate your perspective. Thank you, sir. Stay safe. We will be right back. Stay with us.